Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. From budget challenges to the start of a controversial new statewide private school voucher plan, the start of a new year in many Wisconsin schools will not be uneventful. Classes for Hamilton Elementary School students already began in July, marking the start of the first year-round school in La Crosse. That's where I started the conversation with La Crosse School Superintendent Randy Nelson regarding some of the changes a new year brings for the district.
What we're hearing is all positive at this particular point, and our parents have been fully on board on this. At the same time, we had some parents that when we moved down this path, we had some parents who said, I don't know that schedule is going to work. We provided them an opportunity in another school for us. But we also gained several new students, certainly their parents as well, because they liked the idea of this year-round calendar. So things are going well. And one of the several reasons that we were discussing doing this was that we really felt that for students that we could help mitigate what we see as the summer slide. That's when students have a full 12 weeks off, we find ourselves at the beginning of the next school year spending a lot of time reteaching, trying to get kids caught up so that we can start working on the grade level curriculum that we're supposed to be. And so this was designed to kind of reduce the number of students that would require reteaching at the beginning of the year. Just based on the discussion I had with Mr. Michaels here last week, what he's telling me is that the data that they're looking at right now is suggesting that indeed that did happen. We have fewer students who are requiring supports here at the beginning of the year, which is exactly what we wanted to do, among several other things as well.
And there are 45 days on and 15 days off?
Yep, it's called a 45-15 calendar. You know, sometimes people get a little confused because they know that, for instance, that the state has a law that says you can't start school before Labor Day, I think, if that's something like that. But there are exceptions to that, and one of the exceptions is if you have a year-round calendar. And there are several ways to look at a year-round calendar, but the Department of Public Instruction views a 45-15 calendar, as such as the one we're doing, as what a year-round calendar means.
What about for students? I mean, the idea that they are not getting the full summer break they're totally used to. Granted, they're younger students. This is K through third grades.
Yep, so that's right. Well, it's K through three. And then what we're anticipating is that we'll add grade four next year and grade five the next year, so that eventually over the next 3 years, this really will be a K-5 option. I think, and based on my own experience, actually, as a parent, I really saw my school-aged children, especially at elementary level, they were ready for something in the middle of July. They were ready to go back, spend some more time with friends, not just their neighborhood friends who they're spending time with now, but their other friends as well. From that student perspective, I think it's been fine for them, and they're still getting opportunity in this year-round calendar to play. They're getting opportunity to connect with their friends and stay connected with their friends. And so I do think in many ways it's a win-win for them.
And if it ends up being successful, and however you measure success with a program like this, would there be the possibility of expanding it to other schools within the district over time?
If, as you said, how we move forward in measuring this and the success of this, you know, I think we would be doing ourselves a disservice if we didn't at least look at it. If this is really successful, and we intend to be research-based and best practice-based, we really need to spend the time to take a look at that particular program and talk about its efficacy in other buildings in the future. If, at the other hand, we don't see it as successful as what we thought it might be, then just the opposite could be true. Is it something that we should continue or not? So yeah, I think it's going to take us 2 or 3 years, really, to really look at that and determine whether this is something, a practice we should crystallize or not.
I understand that there's care provided for students who, when school's in session at all the other schools, so I'm assuming outside of the summertime, there's care either at the school or you're working with Boys and Girls Club on that. Right. Has that added extra costs within the school district?
No, not really. What's happened is that, you know, during there's 45 days on, there's 15 days off. And so during those 15 days off, we're calling that an intersession. And what we're doing is we're ensuring that even during the intersession, we have activities and opportunities available to those children so they can still come to school. But we're partnering with the Boys and Girls Club, with the Y, and other organizations to ensure that there's good support there and that we're providing good enrichment and perhaps even sometimes some intervention. In terms of cost, the 3-week interventions are, excuse me, the 3-week intersessions are not so much a cost factor as some staffing things that we've had to invest in a little bit this year. It's not a huge amount, but we really found ourselves in a position that, well, let's invest in this practice because it's not completely cost neutral. For instance, we have some staff who are working on this particular schedule that starts on July 18th, while at the same time they're working on the traditional schedule. And so that causes some challenges in terms of scheduling their days, not scheduling the days, and you know when they're going to work, and does have a small price tag to it to do that. But it's worth the run at it. What we know is that as in our public schools, we've got to look at our practices. We've got to be willing to do some things differently in order to move forward in support of our children, but also our community and its parents.
Have the teachers had to change maybe the way they prepare for the school year?
Let me use a term for you that is not real scientific, but it comes from curriculum experts. The term is chunking. And what they really talk about is having the capacity when they look at these 4 9-week periods of time is being able to more effectively plan and chunk their curriculum in such a way that they can keep a better perspective on the whole year. It's a challenge when you're in the classroom, and sometimes you'll get into March or April and you'll revisit your curriculum documents and where you are, and in March all of a sudden, oh my goodness, it's March and I'm only halfway through my curriculum. I should have been here in January. I'm gonna have to start picking this up a little bit. Whereas when you get that opportunity, those 3 weeks, those 15 days in intercession, to be able to stop, regroup, take a look at your next 9 weeks. It's a better way to plan and to chunk that curriculum, and I think it provides more success for the children, and it also, I think, provides a better peace of mind for the teaching staff as well. Say, here's our 9 weeks, here's what we're going to do. The other thing that sometimes happens during those intercessions is that teachers have the capacity, as they look at that next 9 weeks and what they're going to be doing, they really have the capacity as a team to sit down and say, maybe we should move some kids around here, because we're going to be doing this in social studies or this in mathematics, this could make better sense. This is an area that you're stronger in than I am, et cetera. And so I think it plays well in terms of working with one another and being a team.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. My guest today is La Crosse School District Superintendent Randy Nelson. We're talking about the new school year. Another change this year is that the Design Institute, which is one of the charter choice schools within the district, has expanded to sixth graders.
This is a school that is going to be adding grade six. It's also one that we will just received a new charter school grant with the idea to extend that experience into high school as well. And so we're looking at that contract with the governance council of that charter school to determine what's going to work here, what's not going to work, and how would we want to move forward with that. Ultimately, what we're looking for, and one of the unique things about this particular charter school, is that this is really based on project-based learning. It's based on the kids, the students actually identifying the problems and projects through an inquiry-based model about, you know, what it is that I'm curious about. But what's, I think, really neat about it is that the students still have to meet all of the standards. They use a little program that we have that has them actually monitor their pace on those standards and how they're doing on all of those standards. So the other unique thing about this is that it is student-based. It's kind of customized. The students are really managing themselves, and the teacher really is facilitator, helping them out and helping them with further questions or maybe resources or ideas about how they can make that their project even better. It's designed to be a program that is embedded in our community, whereas our school is kind of the place where the students meet every day. We're really intending for it to branch out into something in the community. And the last thing I'll say is that charter schools really sometimes tend to be a place where we try new practices. And this new practice of allowing students to really navigate their own learning and to monitor their own learning, to keep track of their own learning, is something that I think is going to be important in the future of public education. Down the road, we really need to make sure that we have the capacity to customize the education of every child. I think that's where things are going, and I think that something like this helps us better understand, even at the early stages, what it's like to do that, what it takes to do that.
Something that started up last year within the La Crosse School District was the La Crosse Promise. It's sort of this two-phase program.
Right.
Where first they want to help high school students prepare for college, and eventually down the line, They want to develop a program that would provide scholarships to students who pledge to stay within the city of La Crosse. Right now, we're just still in the Future Center phase of it. But how did that go for students? What sort of feedback did you get for those who are preparing for college?
Actually, we received really good feedback. You know, what we have in the Future Center is this is, as you mentioned, a part of the La Crosse Promise. And really, La Crosse Promise is moving forward right now as a significant economic development sort of approach for our city, for our community. But one of the pieces, because ultimately the goal is to provide a scholarship for all of our graduates, whether it's a scholarship to a four-year college or a two-year college or to go get a welding certificate, makes no difference. But every graduate would have access to dollars to help them with tuition. That's the end goal. But in order for us to really get there, we're really doing some things incrementally. And one of the first things that we're doing is we're really working on these future centers to ensure that the pieces are in place at high school so that if and when that particular scholarship program ever does become a reality, we've got students who are fully prepared to navigate this. Now, one of the things that happens with this is we have a Future Center advisor in each one of our two high schools. Our private schools are also included in this, and so they're assigned in part to our private schools as well. But these individuals are working with parents, they're working with students. The whole process of getting yourself not just ready for college, but those imminent months right before you do go to college, where you're selecting a college and you're getting your financial aid, those things can be pretty daunting to the extent that some parents would say, hey, let's not even go there. This is ridiculous what we have to do to get this done. Or some parents will say from a generational standpoint, I didn't go on after high school, and so, or they'll say, I don't know that we can afford to go on, et cetera. And so part of this, part of the work right now is to help our students demystify this. This is in partnership with our guidance counselors in our schools because they still do this work as well. This is adding more hands on this with, a focus completely for that purpose. They have evening meetings with parents and help parents understand things that need to go on. They help students with essays. If they have to write an essay to be accepted into a school, they'll help them with the content of those essays, how they might organize that, et cetera. So it's a wonderful service, and it's there. It's been funded for 3 years by private dollars, by individuals in our community who believe that this is a good idea. And so it's funded for 3 years. This coming school year, we're starting our second year. And from the first year data that we're receiving, we've had hundreds of students who have been positively impacted by the Future Centers. We want to expand the number of students, of course, because I think as we move down this path, as we get to that point where all of our students would have access to a scholarship if they choose to use it, the Future Centers will be an important component of that.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. My guest today is Randy Nelson. He's the superintendent of the school district of La Crosse. Another big change this year is the fact that Aquinas Catholic Schools was one of 25 schools in the state that was approved to offer vouchers within the area. Yeah. I'm wondering if you can talk about what this means for the school district of La Crosse.
Yeah. You know, if I could, Maureen, first in the bigger sense here, I think that for those of us who kind of watch what happens politically and with our legislature, I don't think in decades, perhaps in the history of our state, has there been more landmark things that have been passed through our legislature here than this last budget session. And perhaps the voucher piece stands at the top of that list of very unique things that are happening. That being said, you know, we have our school district has a strong relationship with our Aquinas schools. We provide for them much of their transportation. We're required to by law. We do provide for them consultative services and special education as we're required to by law. So we have a good working relationship with our Catholic schools, and actually they do a nice job of educating kids. They're a good option that's out there, no doubt about that. I think that one of the challenges that we've had with the way the vouchers have come forward in terms of providing that choice is that there has not been, there's not been an important conversation about accountability. And I just believe that where there is public dollars, there ought to be public accountability for those dollars. And I think it's really important, and I hope that as this piece moves forward, assuming that it will, that there's more discussion about that and other accountability measures as well.
And I believe there is pending legislation regarding
there's pending
the
legislation.
Accountability.
Yeah, and what I'm concerned about is that even as I'm looking at that pending legislation, it looks like it's really limited to just being on the state's report card. So all of our schools will be receiving a report card with a score out of 100 on that report card, and it looks like the private voucher schools will be on that as well. So there's an accountability piece for academics. But there are so many other accountability pieces that are in place for public schools that really, by virtue of the rules that were passed, don't have to be there for our private voucher schools. And I think that remains a concern as we move forward. As you may know, there are several restrictions that in these first 2 years have been put in place by the legislature with regard to the number of students who could actually go into a private voucher school. No more than 1% of our public school students in the school district of La Crosse can go into that. No more than 500 students statewide, and then 1,000 students the next year can go into that. But I think one of the things that we all have to just assume, whether we like it or not, is that those numbers are going to change during the next funding biennium. I really think that our legislators are going to say, let's just do it for everyone. It doesn't matter what your income is. It doesn't matter how many students, et cetera. You know, the goal here is a voucher in every student's backpack. The goal here is to do a degree of privatizing and provide those opportunities for parents to make those decisions. And so I think we have to be prepared for that. And whereas that hasn't been the case as much in the past, we need to be prepared for that.
And you've said in the past that financially, depending on where all this goes, it could have an impact on the school district of La Crosse.
Well, definitely. And really what's happened now is that it already is having an impact in terms of budgetary work. Our legislature set aside millions of dollars last year for education. But when they set those dollars aside, they set some of it aside for public education, and now they set a good amount aside for private education, for private voucher school education. And I think that one of our challenges is that the decision to set aside dollars for private voucher schools really represents a decision to fund two separate school systems in the state of Wisconsin, especially given the fact that about 70% of the students statewide who signed up for the vouchers here over the summer are already in those private voucher schools in some form or another. So it really has become a way to fund those schools, most of them all religious schools. And I think, taking my superintendent's hat off for a moment, one of the things that I'm having a hard time just getting my getting my head around is the notion of what we always used to assume was a pretty strong wall between funding church versus state. And by what's happening is that's just been broken down with us. So the wall's just been rolled over. I think that's one of the things that we're going to see down the road. It'll be interesting to see how that carries out.
Randy Nelson is the superintendent of the La Crosse School District. We talked about the upcoming school year. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. From the impact of the new private school voucher program on La Crosse public schools to what the new program means for Aquinas Catholic schools, Aquinas is one of 25 new private schools eligible for the first time to accept voucher students as part of the new statewide plan. I talked with Aquinas Catholic Schools President Kurt Nelson in his office about what the change means.
The families that meet the criteria for this program are those that have the most modest of economic means. So paying extra tuition is a challenge for them. Even with lots and lots of scholarship dollars and financial aid that we provide, it still is a huge challenge. So this allows those families to be able to choose, you know, a Catholic school or you know, in our particular area or in other areas, another private school that really meets the needs for their child.
How many families will be able to use the voucher program here at Aquinas?
We actually received notice of 22 students that have been selected to receive a voucher. So we're in the process now of those families. There's a final step that they do to accept that voucher and become fully enrolled and everything. So we're in the process of doing those right now. So we have 16 of those confirmed now, and the rest, you know, have to be in the next couple days. So we're looking at about 22 students.
And with school starting this week, it's kind of quick turnaround. And for at least the families, I don't know if they have to change anything or if it's almost like an added bonus for them this year.
It is a very quick turnaround. And we had out of the 22 families, half of those, about 11, were students that were already enrolled for the fall at Aquinas, and 11 were brand new students. So for those brand new families, you're right, it's been a very quick kind of scramble and quick short notice to make those changes. But it's been a really exciting thing. I know the families are tremendously excited and very grateful. Our teachers are very excited because they know the struggles too that the families go through, and so it's been really, really exciting for us. This first year, it's been a very compressed timeline, so that we're right up here against the start of school. In starting the next year, though, the timeline will actually be kind of February to April, right around the time that's the same as the public school open enrollment period. It's during our Aquinas Catholic Schools enrollment period, so it'll be a much more natural timeline next year where people will have lots of notice to be able to make those preparations.
More students will be able to apply for the voucher program next year. Do you have any sense whether or not more students will be able to come to Aquinas through the voucher program, more than that 22 this year for next year?
Well, that actually is one of the things that DPI is clarifying right now with the legislature. They're trying to clarify, in the second year, does it mean they go through the same process and 25 additional schools get in, or is it the same 25 schools that now get those 1,000 slots instead of 500? So they're still trying to work out exactly the second year, but we know that as one of the first set of 25 schools, we will automatically be eligible next year and be included in the program. So that makes a huge difference for families.
What sort of difference does it make for financial aid, since I'm assuming you have a set amount of you know, grants and scholarships and payment options, possibly? Mm-hmm. So how does this change financial aid? Can you expand it to more families, since there are families who will be receiving vouchers now?
Yeah, what we're doing right now is looking at the families who did receive a voucher. Some of those families that I mentioned had already enrolled in Aquinas Catholic Schools, so we had already allocated scholarship awards for those families. So we're currently in the process of looking at those families that received a voucher who will not need those scholarship dollars now, and actually being able to reallocate those to other families who qualified for the voucher program but weren't selected as one of the 22. We had 100 students altogether that qualified. So we'll look at those other families who didn't get picked and say, okay, are there some additional scholarship funds we can provide to those families to try to make it within their reach as well.
And are most of these families from La Crosse County, or is there a certain area that they can come from in order to use the voucher program?
They really can come from anywhere. The families that applied for vouchers came primarily from the La Crosse School District boundaries, but we also had students from Holman and Onalaska, West Salem, and DeSoto districts. So most of the students who were selected, most of them were La Crosse, and we had a few West Salem families as well.
If the voucher program continues, what sort of difference do you think it will make overall for families in the area who, you know, would like to have this option to send their children to a Catholic school but haven't been able to financially afford it?
I know that there's a lot of families who are interested in Catholic education, but they kind of know that tuition's right up there. So immediately that throws up a roadblock. And some families don't even investigate it any further than that because they just go, we can't afford anything else additionally, you know, beyond our taxes and other commitments. There are a lot of other families, though, that do make some sacrifices to start and maybe can do that for a couple of years, but then it gets to be overwhelming even with additional financial aid. So they're either able, they only maybe can go through elementary or, you know, so many years, and then they can't continue. So there's a lot of families that are also in that bind of they want to continue Catholic education, but as it gets a little bit more expensive, as students start getting into high school and things, they want to be able to continue that, and this provides them help with that.
And I know there's a handful of things going on within the state legislature regarding how the voucher school programs will be overseen and whatnot. What are your thoughts on what's going on at the state level when it comes to this?
A lot of the issues that are being thrown around for accountability are measures that Aquinas Catholic Schools already meets. Things like qualifications for staff and things. While that wasn't included in the original legislation expanding the program, one of the requirements of that legislation was you have to be accredited. And accreditation requires that we have certified teachers. So while the legislature didn't directly require it, in essence, we are required to have it because we have to be accredited and meet all those criteria. So there are a number of things that, you know, almost all of those criteria that they're talking about Aquinas Catholic Schools is already doing. And so it isn't as big of an issue for us, I know.
And what about the people who say there should be this separation of church and state. They don't want their state dollars going towards a religious education. And it's not just, you know, there's plenty of Catholic schools, Lutheran schools, there were Jewish schools that were approved for the voucher program. But how do you respond to that?
Well, I think the biggest issue is to remember that the state has a very legitimate interest in making sure its citizens are well-educated. That nobody doubts. But I think one of the things that we've realized, too, is that that doesn't just mean only state government schools can do that. It really is about giving parents choices, and if parents decide that a different type of school meets their needs best, whether it's a public school, a charter school, an online school, or a private school, allow parents to make those choices, and then the tax dollars that are meant to educate that child should follow that child to provide the education for that child. That's ultimately the goal, is to educate each individual child, not just to maintain a school system, per se.
Kurt Nelson is president of Aquinas Catholic Schools in La Crosse. He talked about the start of the statewide private school voucher program in its first year at Aquinas. Aquinas was one of 25 new private schools accepted into the program by the state of Wisconsin for the school year. Listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Coming up next, we'll talk about the La Crosse Compassion Project. More than 6,000 La Crosse students will be sharing their views on compassion through art and writing. Archives of this and other recent editions of Newsmakers, extended interviews, photos, and links can be found on our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. You can also like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.